Welcome to the latest Serotalk Tech Chat, powered by Accessible Event, a product of Serotech Corporation, giving the blind, deaf, and deafblind full access to classes, meetings, and webinars using Microsoft Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint slides, and web pages. 508 compliance is just one click away at www.accessibleevent.com. And now, here's your host, Michael Loff. And welcome to Serotalk Tech Chat. Number 64, it is for June 24, 2010, and this is Michael Loff. And tonight we are talking about what's new and exciting in Microsoft's latest version of Office, and that being 2010. We have two guests with us. Jeff, I want to start with you until I get Peter back in here. One of the features that has been a real problem in 07, a little bit better in 2010, but you wrote a pretty detailed article, is this concept of SharePoint. You want to explain what that is, how it's used, and kind of where we are in terms of accessibility?
Yeah, sure. Should first start off by saying that even Microsoft doesn't seem capable of properly defining what SharePoint is. Is it a collaborative tool? Yes. Is it a web content management tool? Yes. Does it do social media? Yes. Does it allow you to do taxonomy and other data mining activities? Yes. Does it allow you to store files and exchange calendaring and those kind of things? Yes. So one of the challenges with saying what SharePoint is really just in defining it. So I'll just say that it's a tool that allows you to store files and make other material public through a website, usually internally in your own organization. So you'll set it up and you'll likely have a whole bunch of subsections to it. You share documents, information, calendars, and other material. For those of us who've been kind of suffering through its usage within the 2003 and 2007 versions of the product, it has been anything but enjoyable as an experience. Even Microsoft themselves have, so hats off on that front, admitted that they aren't doing a very good job or hadn't been doing a very good job on that front. They had created something called, or they got a company to help them create something called the Accessibility Kit for SharePoint to kind of patch some of their challenges. So 2010, what is a bit of a different beast. They've done a lot of work to improve the way it functions. They've attempted to make it WCAG, or Web Content Accessibility Guidelines 2.0 AA compliant, which basically means it's supposed to be accessible. How that actually ends up for the end user is a bit different. There seems to be quite a gap between standards compliant and actually being usable. What I will say the biggest challenges in it will be with content management. It's very easy for someone to put up inaccessible information in the service. It's very easy for someone to put an add-on or other piece that likely won't work with a screen reader. So if you want a little bit as far as tips that go towards how to approach or how to navigate a SharePoint site, I'll just mention my blog here, Michael, if you don't mind.
Oh, shameless plugs are welcome here.
Yeah.
And I've got blog it up on the screen.
BlackSphereTech.com.
Sorry, what was that? Blog.what?
BlackSphereTech.com.
BlackSphereTech.com. Okay.
You got it. And there's an article on there that goes through some strategies for solving it. One of the things that most organizations use SharePoint for is to save and store files, to be able to access them, to group them into a hierarchy, basically like a shared drive without having a shared drive. The easiest way to access it, in my opinion, is actually to connect it into Windows Explorer. So you literally navigate the tree or structure of the SharePoint site or the section of the SharePoint site like you would any other shared drive or folder or section on your page. There's instructions on how to go about doing this on the blog posting. I find it's probably the most efficient way to deal with SharePoint. Likewise, for things like shared calendars, which is another item that you can do with SharePoint, is you can have group calendars and other pieces. So
what happens if multiple people try to access it? I mean, how does it, what if two of you are trying to manipulate the document at the same time?
In 2007, you did that. You checked it out, sort of like you would check out a book in a library. and you checked it back in when you finished making your changes. In 2010, it's a simultaneous activity. So that can be a little interesting. I haven't seen it in large-scale usage yet, but essentially the document contains or retains the changes as you make them, and you can see what other people are working on within the same document.
And it actually does update in real time. It's actually pretty pretty neat to see. From an accessibility standpoint, it's kind of a nightmare, but
there's an understatement.
Yeah, so that's I just wanted to cover that. They mention a lot of these other web-based apps, and I don't know if any of you have done anything with that. But it sounds like they're, A, kind of dumbed down because they don't want people to just start using them for free and not buying Office. So I don't know how much orientation you have with those, but I'm obviously concerned as we migrate more into cloud computing if we're going to be shut out as these things evolve. They got something for Windows Mobile 6.5, and of course they're saying how much better it's going to be when Mobile 7 comes out, except the fact that we're not going to have access to that. So
don't get me started.
Right,
on that.
I'm not going to go there. I want to go a different direction. But let's talk about the ribbons, because a lot of people have been thrown off, put off by the ribbons, and they do have a good mnemonic structure. So it's just getting your head around it.
All right. I'll say something about the ribbons real quick here, folks, because a lot of people are using tools to go back to the 2003 menu structure, et cetera, et cetera. Frankly, it's time to get over it. Menus are gone. They're not coming back. And as far as Microsoft products go, the ribbons are going to spread further and further. The new versions of WordPad and things like that, you're seeing the menus or the menus be replaced in favor of the ribbon. So it's time to learn how to use it.
Yeah, Peter, they've actually even extended the ribbon onto their web presences, like SharePoint has a ribbon now.
I did see that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. So sorry.
Now that the harshness is over, I'll say, once you get used to the ribbons, I find that the navigation is fairly logical and that it's really not any more difficult than using the menus were.
Okay, so it's just I don't know if there's a master hotkey list, because you still do have the hotkeys. I know in 07, at least, there were a few features that were not on the ribbon. So if you knew the hotkey, you could pull that up. And now as we get into 2010, you have the ability to either manipulate. I don't know if any of you have done that.
Customize
where you can.
It.
Yeah, you can really customize
it. Sections. Group them together the way that makes sense to you.
So. And that's all accessible. I mean, you can group all your favorite tasks, all the things that you do in one place, and can hide elements you don't use.
Saying all accessible might be a little bit ambitious.
Yeah.
There are still some areas you need to work through, kind of.
Obviously, people need to get oriented to the ribbon concept first anyway, before they can even go through.
There are some really, really good tables out there on Microsoft's site, and I'll try to track down a link for those on corresponding ribbon positions and old menu positions. They applied mostly to 2007, but a lot of that stuff does transfer to 2010.
Well, Microsoft's really pushing in 2010 OneNote, including it in all versions. My son actually likes it. So we'll talk about what that is. It's that's like some kind of collaboration. I guess he uses it to create some big multifunctional notebook, diary, what have you. But he talked about how it could be used in classes and meetings and just kind of organizing events and so forth.
Yeah, one of my coworkers loves it. Just adores it. Uses it quite heavily. Before I lost a lot of my sight, I was actually using it a little bit in its very first iteration. It's quite a nice tool in that it basically takes the same role as a pad and a piece of paper. You know, in school, you spend your time writing down note after note after note in these, you know, pages and pages of lined paper, and it basically allows you to do the same thing. It doesn't type, it's handwriting. So you are really drawing and handwriting and doodling and so on, but you can group it into books and subpages and pages and move stuff around. It has handwriting recognition, which is mediocre but adequate. You can drop images and graphics and draw around them and so on. So a bunch of people with OneNote installed can load a OneNote document and do the same sort of collaboration together.
Has anyone even attempted accessibility in OneNote?
I don't think it it's achievable. There is a lot in there, in that you get the handwriting recognition to be able to convert it to text. The items are generally tabbable, so the keyboard access is there, but a lot of it is just, I mean, it's the equivalent of a paint or drawing package, really.
Now explain this. You've got 32 and 64-bit versions, but at least even Microsoft is telling people to skip the 64-bit version unless you're opening Excel spreadsheets greater than 2 gig. So wait a minute, they created the 64-bit OS, they created the 64-bit Office. I assume there would be some benefit in speed and performance, and now they're telling people not to use it.
Here's the difference between 32 and 64-bit. The 64-bit versions of Office 2010 will be able to address more than 2.8 gigabytes of memory at one time. The use case for that is, I think, extremely rare. And for anyone, for 99.9% of anybody that would ever hear this, 32-bit is going to be what you want to do.
Mm-hmm. I wish I knew that before I threw 64-bit on, because it said that a lot of the add-ons won't work, especially in Outlook. Well, go ahead, Jeff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually ran the 64-bit version of it prior to its release, and when it came out, I ran the 32-bit version, or installed the 32-bit version, because I was finding the 64-bit version a bit sluggish under the 64-bit operating system. And I find
it tries to address more memory than it needs to, and then it starts to slow your whole system down.
Now, Peter, I know both of you have some vision, right? So what about the new color scheme? My son said he likes it. It's more of a white, where it used to be blue, right? Do you notice any changes there?
I think it's a little less busy because of the changes in the color, but I don't really care that much, honestly.
And it fits really nicely with different color schemes someone might have. Personally, I use high contrast, so it adopts my colors as opposed to its.
Okay, so let's explain kind of the new file menu and what they're calling this backstage view against something else kind of half implemented. You got, what, open, save, save as, yet kind of merged with other functions that have been plugged in there, you know, like saving to SharePoint or SkyDrive, which we didn't talk about, or maybe you mentioned that Microsoft's way to let you basically their half-baked version of Dropbox. It doesn't work for all folks, but you can store 25 gig online, changing file types, publishing your blog posts, creating XPS and PDF documents. We might talk about that facet of it, but talk about this backstage. What are they trying to do there?
You want to go first, Jeff?
No, I was just going to say that I mean, we had the Office button prior to this, which pretty much had many of the same functions, and I think they were trying to simplify it into one place so that things people would use, especially when they're collaborating, are there. I mean, I didn't find it all that unusual or strange to work from. It just seemed like a better way to lay things out than 2007.
So Microsoft heard a lot of screaming and yelling that they took away your file menu. And a lot of their focus in 2010 has been cloud integration. They're trying to move forward into the sort of cloud computing age and sort of take a couple of stabs at Google and other places that are doing some more real cloud-based computing. So they wanted to group all of that stuff together, and they figured the best way to do that was to give you your precious file menus back. Yay. And to put all the cloud computing stuff kind of alongside. I agree with Michael that it seems a little half-baked. You see a lot of places where it's like it looks one certain way and behaves a certain way in Word, and then you go to Outlook or Excel and you're like, how come it's not the same? And so I just think that they didn't quite get that portion of it finished.
Well, yeah, they've even said that they didn't get as far as they wanted to, so something to look forward to in the next version, I suppose. Now, they talk about this paste with live preview that's supposed to help you see how your content's going to look as you're pasting in content from other documents, either into Word or Excel. Have any of you played with that? Is it useful? You have the option to kind of keep the source formatting if it looks good, or merge the formatting. Good luck. I've never had luck with merging formatting, or just keep it as text only if it's just not going to import very well and reformat once you have it inserted.
And so the issue is that when you're copying and pasting from a lot of different sources, web pages, things like that, Windows and Office has to do a lot of guessing as to where you want things to go. And a lot of times you copy and paste something into a document and it's real ugly. It looks bad. So what they've done is they've kind of allowed you to see a little brief thumbnail overview of how that might look when you drop it into the document. And there are those options to kind of merge or do text only. Unfortunately, given the way they've done it and the current way screen readers tend to access Office, I doubt that it'll work too well. I've never really tried it with the screen reader. Maybe Jeffrey has.
No, it doesn't work. I mean, essentially, you have many of the same features, but where they actually do the action into the document already. I mean, you'd had those in 2007. They've just tried to visualize that prior, sort of like a preview. And no screen reader I've tried, and I've tried three with Office 2010, has been able to cope with the preview views.
And I don't even know that it's accessible to the operating system as far as actually seeing it. It may just be an image because it looks very much like it's like a snapshot. We'll get into it at some point. I think I'll probably try to programmatically look at it at some point, but it's not until we get all the other stuff worked out.
What about Excel? Do either of you do much in Excel? Have you seen a lot of changes there? It looks like some of the stuff they were talking about goes in greater detail than things I would use. But
I would just say one quick thing before we move to Excel. You missed something in the Office, the accessibility checker.
Well, that's pretty important.
Yeah, now in Word and several other Excel and I think PowerPoint as well. You can go to the backstage area, and under that section, there's now an accessibility checker that lets you know whether you've put alt tags on your images or text equivalents on your images, and if your heading orders are sucky, and so on and so forth.
In response to complaints from a lot of document authors that they would get nasty emails from blind people like us saying, you didn't make your document accessible, Microsoft has attempted to provide document authors with tools to help them remediate those accessibility issues. So thank you, Microsoft. Not sure that it went quite as far as it could have, but
you should have had it front and foremost. I agree. And I think they could have gone a little further with integrating with some of the online services they have, like SharePoint, to make that process completely seamless, as in you don't put something in there until it is.
You know,
compliant.
I've noticed that Microsoft's web services have started to get better, but what's surprising to me is that it's taken this long. Microsoft sells to the federal government. The federal government is subject to laws that say they're supposed to buy technology that's accessible to people with disabilities. In theory, that's a straight-up policy, and there shouldn't ever be any deviation from that, but in practice we know that that doesn't really happen. So I guess I'm surprised to see them take so long to kind of address some of these issues. They've done a great job with the newer Outlook web access interface, and you know, I think that's probably in large part due to the fact that pretty much everybody uses Exchange.
Mm-hmm. And you have multiple Exchange accounts now. Is that something that it benefits either of you? I guess it might yourself, Peter. I've never seen a need for multiple Exchange server access, but obviously some people do.
Yeah, no, actually it is helpful. My personal email is through Gmail, and they have an ActiveSync interface, Exchange like interface to it, and of course my workplace has Exchange, and you know, there's a couple of different places where I use Exchange, and it is nice to be able to finally keep them in one profile together.
Did you have any comments on Excel before I go a different direction here?
Accessibility checker is a nice piece.
Yep. Yeah, Accessibility Inspector is nice. Actually, back to Accessibility Inspector for a second. They did do a real good job with it as far as checking forms and things like that. So, you know, we should be glad that they did that, and they should be commended for their forward thinking on that. But I would have liked to see them put it closer up front to maybe, like, right next to the save button.
It is kind of hidden. Or it could be an option you could turn on that before you save a document, it would show you that this thing has problems.
Well, let's talk about Outlook. I mean, quite a number of changes there. The message threading, which a lot of people like, but apparently more do not, at least in the beta program, and they turned it off by default. So you have to enable that to, you know, keep all your like messages together. You've got this quick steps function where you can assign multiple tasks together, but it seems to be locked down to each individual email address. So much for trying to save content with a similar subject matter, but from different addresses. And as we mentioned, the multiple exchange accounts, the social connector, which I haven't played with yet, talking about you can view and interact and post to Facebook, LinkedIn, MySpace, Windows Live. I don't see Twitter mentioned there, but of course we have the TW Inbox, which is a nice plug-in giving Twitter access to Outlook. But what are your thoughts on Outlook and the changes there?
You want me to go first? I can go ahead. First.
Go ahead.
I think there's a lot in it that is quite fantastic. I very much... Oh, come on. I really like the threaded view. I really like being able to say, in this mailing list, I don't want to hear this. This whole thread, ignore it. And I want every future post as well to be ignored. That, to me, saves me tremendous amounts of time and actually makes it possible for me to get through a mailing list in a timely fashion, because there's nothing worse than going through 100 posts and, you know, 50 of them you're not interested in.
I'll be honest with you, I pretty much don't follow mailing lists for that reason, so this gives me the motivation to go back and subscribe to a few that do have some useful information, and with the quick ability to ignore whole threads that I have no interest in.
Threaded conversations is one of those things. A lot of people have trouble with it first because I think it's a little bit of a difficult concept. You know, you get a ton of email and you expect to see the newest ones, you know, kind of at the top or bottom, depending on how you have your email sorted. But if you can live with threaded conversations for a week, I guarantee you won't go back.
And they've really improved the way it works in 2010 as well. And even when you're not running the threaded conversations, you still get some of the benefits, because when you open up an email from someone, if other people have replied to it later in your inbox, it will actually have that listed in the status bar. So, you know, it'll say that this isn't the latest message in the conversation, which is a nice feature, because it means that, oh, wait, maybe I shouldn't reply to this. Bob's already replied to it. Don't need to waste my time on that.
And what about this social connector aspect about Facebook? I mean, is this doable? What does it offer? Have you used it?
It looked inaccessible to me when I tried it.
I didn't get that far.
I can't say I did either. But we certainly should investigate that and see if it offers anything. And if not, then we...
When I tried to connect it to my Facebook account, it kind of locked up on me. So I don't know. Are we talking about... I mean, has anyone seen the... I mean, I've seen multiple versions of Office 2010 kind of out there. When I tried the social connector, it was with the final version that was seeded to corporate customers.
Right, that's what I have as well, so...
Yeah, I was a little surprised to see that some of that stuff was broken.
Yeah, I mean, right now social networking is even the hot topic in large corporations and government and so on. So I can definitely see them needing to meet that, because they're also doing it in SharePoint as well. They're even building their own equivalent Facebook in there, which MySpace or whatever.
Okay, we got to have our MySpace. Yeah, buddy. So what about...
Does anyone actually use MySpace?
I think just kids and parents and grandparents who want to follow what their kids or grandkids are doing. That's what I think.
And bands.
And bands, yeah. Yeah, got to be in their bands. Yeah.
The one thing I do say about Outlook is the IMAP support is fantastic. It wasn't so great with some of the pre-releases, but every issue I had when connecting, I connect it to my Gmail account through IMAP, and I find it very stable. I find it works very well. They've gotten rid of some of the delays that they had previously in the pre-release, so hats off on that front.
What about search functionality? I know they've specifically talked about changes in Word to navigation and search panes, but what about just searching in general, just to find subject matter within documents?
Searching, especially if you've got Vista or Windows 7, just integrates with the indexing service and the indexes that are on your Windows local machine. So if your search index is clean, it's outstanding. It's very fast. It works real well. Does it even run on XP? I haven't even tried that.
They have a Search 4.0 add-on that they want you to run and install.
Right, that's for 2007, but does Office 2010?
No, 2010 has it as well, because when I installed it on on XP. That's the first thing it said. Before you proceed, you need to install this Search 4.0. So neither of you, I guess, have played with this, but I was very intrigued, and I'm definitely going to spend some time to see what, if anything, we can do here. But enhancements to PowerPoint and video, the ability to do full feature video editing, including trimming, adding effects, changing the poster frame, which, of course, is a little image, I guess, that you see when the video is idle before you've started it or what have you. Playing video in the background, compressing video, and I don't know if by that they mean the size of it for broadcast purposes or they mean the physical size of the video within a PowerPoint presentation. But
I think they mean the actual video file.
Right, that's what I thought, the actual video file. So they're claiming
and
here.
And being able to export a PowerPoint as a video.
Exactly, that's where I was going, exporting PowerPoint audio as a video and sharing either via YouTube or some other portal. So, and broadcasting, which I guess you either have to use Windows Live or SharePoint to accomplish that. But that's exciting to me if you can actually create a PowerPoint presentation and put it into just a streaming video. And then share that. That could be really useful for education, training, what have you. But neither of you have done anything in that realm?
Well, I guess my concern with exporting with a video, I haven't really played with that, but kind of on a tangent, exporting a PowerPoint as a video I think might diminish the accessibility of the information. And so that would be my major concern with that.
Oh, if it's all graphical.
Right, because it's going to export it. If it exports it as a YouTube video, of course, it's going to be visually there, but there isn't going to be any... certainly Flash Player is not going to be able to display it.
Well, I guess we should try to clarify, explain the infamous multi-versions here. We have three home versions, three home editions, and three business versions, and of course, whatever
the teacher version.
The single PC install version, I guess, is the generic one that you get if you buy it, and it comes installed, the Office Starter Basic, I guess, and it's a very generic version of Word and Excel, and that's bundled with new PCs, but I guess if they give you the disk, all of the other versions are there, so if you can get keys, go buy the key cards or do something, you can actually unlock and use the other elements of that. The Home and Student Edition for $150 with Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and OneNote, but no Outlook on that, which that would bother me, but I guess a lot of students are probably using web-based mail, at least in the college scene. But I want to ask you about this because it talks about, you could use this on three different PCs and it can be used simultaneously. And then it goes on and talks about the home and business version that adds Outlook. Yay, on the retail on that, for something like $299. Maybe you can get down to $220. And I want to talk about another service here shortly called TechNet Standard. But it says that you get a second install, but it cannot legally be used by both people at the same time. So my question to you, Peter, is this network aware? Will it actually detect that two people are using it at once, or is it phoning home to a cloud and coming back and going, hey, you can't use this now, your wife's editing a document, or is that just their – does it mean anything?
No, it's not. It's not registering with another server to let someone know that you're using it. It's kind of similar to the way JAWS does their licensing. They say, you can install JAWS on three computers if you personally own them, but you can't use JAWS simultaneously ever on any computer.
Yeah, same with Window Eyes, right?
Window Eyes, et cetera, et cetera. So the short answer is no. There's no technical limitation that's stopping you. Obviously it's a violation of a license agreement to do so. And so I would recommend against anyone doing that.
Well, we'd never want to do that. That might be a good segue, but I want to explain these Office versions. So I want to talk about that license agreement and how you know when and where you can and can't and should and shouldn't use the TechNet standard, but I'll get there in a minute. You also have the Office Pro Academic version for $100. It says for resellers. Is that basically anyone with a .edu address? Can any student go get this for $100? Or there's some
higher education? Yep, higher education institutions in the U.S. Anybody, generally speaking, that has a .edu address can get it. Also, for those of you who are college students, check with your university. A lot of universities have separate campus agreements with Microsoft, which may allow you to get it at even more of a discounted price. So it's worth a couple of phone calls or emails to some folks to find out about that before you run off and pay more than you necessarily have to.
So why do we have this $150 student version and then we have this $100 academic version, which basically has everything, which I think retails for about $500? What is the logic other than because they can?
Some students, especially outside the U.S., don't have the email addresses, or their institutions, for whatever reason, aren't eligible for that. The Microsoft licensing landscape has always been kind of confusing across the board, and so it's kind of hard to say sometimes why they do certain things.
Yeah, we'll leave it at that. But so you've got now this. I got a little confused because they mentioned Office Standard and then Office Professional, which they said this Pro is like $500, and that brings in that's for individuals or businesses. And, you know, then you get your Outlook, and then it talks about Office Pro Plus 2010. So at this point, I'm confused, and it's saying that adds Communicator, InfoPath, and SharePoint, and I didn't see a price on that. So
Office Pro Plus is the replacement for Office Enterprise in the 2007 series, and that is for software assurance customers or large enterprises that have separate agreements with Microsoft. So there would not be any pricing available for that edition.
Oh, okay, I see. And that's probably the one that I can't get with the service that I was going to mention here. So
yep,
let's talk
that's
about
the one.
Right. Because
that's the one we use.
Yeah, it's the one you use and the one I'm not going to use. Let me. I got links here to obviously Microsoft's try and purchase page, so you can get trials. What do you have? 30, 60 day trials? Are they crippleware? Or what? How do the trials?
I believe it's 60 days on Office Pro. And what happens is after you get to the trial period, they just say you have to buy it if you want to keep using it. So you can go online and buy a key, or you can just not use it anymore.
Are your documents going to a read only mode, or? Does it just not even run?
No, you know, you're fine. They leave your files alone, but you just can't use the software anymore.
Right. So let's explain this TechNet standard. I'm intrigued with it. Of course, there's also a TechNet Plus, I guess, that was that run for about $399 and $249 each additional year, basically giving you access to every version of, I'll say every, but, you know, at least Office XP up through 2010 and Windows XP up through Windows 7, all versions, including the enterprise stuff and the Server 2003 and 2008. I went with the standard version. I may regret it, but pretty much for what I do, it should meet my needs, and that's what I've got a link up here. $199 for the first year and $149 for each additional year. But, Peter, what is the general consensus here about when and where it can be used and cannot be used? It said it can be used on home machines. It just says not in a live environment. So, of course, it would make sense. So I'll let you explain it.
Microsoft TechNet subscriptions are designed for students or IT professionals to have access to Microsoft software for the purposes of software development, networking, or you know, learning how to do things. They're not really designed as home licensing programs, although the terms of the license agreement that you agree to with TechNet Standard would technically allow you as a home user to use the software at your house. Where things become a problem is if, say, you run a business out of your house, technically your use of your computer could be considered a commercial use, and therefore, from a legal standpoint, you're technically violating a license agreement using the software for any sort of business purpose. That having been said, you know, if you're using it at home, probably not a big deal.
Right, because, I mean, how are you going to verify that it works in your business if you can't do some real-world scenario testing?
Right, and they're
and it'll
thinking
never
is,
get into
you know,
the business otherwise.
Right. And their thinking here is they're basically saying don't use this for a business purpose that is visible enough to ever get seen. Okay, so that's kind of what I'll tell you as far as how to do it. Now, for anyone thinking about getting this and then passing out keys to your friends, I'm going to tell you right now that's a bad idea. First of all, if they were inclined to, they could sue you for basically everything you have or ever will have.
Because all they'd have to do is make one call to Microsoft and so what's your key and then find out. Yeah, this. Wait a minute.
Yep. And these keys are all. I mean, these keys are all managed by online activation servers, and they can tell where and when you use them. So, just a caution for some folks on that front.
So again, folks like us, I think my reasons are legit here. You know, I run four or five different machines and I do testing, and of course obviously with the you know, work did I do? But that's so it's something people need to be mindful of. If that's going to be okay, what about a student who just puts it on his laptop and then takes it into the school environment, into the college campus?
That's a murky issue. I haven't read the updated agreements for the new TechNet stuff, and I believe they've changed. But in the past, it looked like that would be okay. Again, you know, it's a thing of student using it in school, probably not a big deal. Student using it in school who owns a home or owns a business and is, you know, becoming a big entrepreneur, probably not a great idea.
Like you said, passing them around, selling them, definitely selling them. It would not be doing that,
selling
folks.
Them is a good way to wind up in trouble. That's.
Or I know people who work on computers and maybe the system's corrupted and they just think, well, I'll just throw one of these keys on there. You really don't want to do that.
No. If you're working on other people's computers, folks, always get the original disks from them. If they don't have valid product keys or valid media for the software, you tell them that they need to install, you know, they need to go get it and install it themselves because it's just not worth it. You can be held liable for that.
Well, we're going to open up questions and the ability for chat. So, again, I'm going to do the voice. Just press F9 and state your first name. We'll call on you in turn. Likewise, you can submit a text question, and we'll see if our experts, Peter Bosley and Jeffrey Stark here, and between myself, I think we have 6 cents. So we can see we can answer those questions for you. Well, I'll go to each of you now. And what has really turned your crank? I mean, what has motivated each of you to say Office 2010 is it, and I'm ready to leave all other versions behind?
Go ahead, Jeffrey.
Okay. Well, I mean, for me, it's the Outlook. I mean, if they didn't get the Outlook right, I would not be there. I love the ability to filter. I love the ability to threaded conversations. I love the ability to connect it via IMAP, because that was my biggest complaint. Was I have Outlook in my email on a variety of different settings, like my phone, my computer, several portable computers. I wanted to have access to my email wherever I want, the same way as if I had a web email service or were using a web email service. So to me, that's piece one. Piece two is the integration with online services that Word brings. I mean, I publish my blog, write it in Word prior to sending it out, and I think it's always been done very well, and I think that that it's just getting better and better.
Did it resolve those issues? There were some issues posting the blog, or were some of the characters, you know, either corrupted the whole transmission of it, or of course, just really going to the whole docx and getting XML and getting away from all that bloated garbage in the doc files has probably done a lot.
Jeffrey, are you using WordPress on your backend?
I use WordPress, and I've used it with SharePoint.
Those of you that do blogs, if you are serious about blogging, go out and get yourself a WordPress install, whether that be a hosted WordPress install or something that you rig up yourself. But it's real powerful.
I love WordPress. We just went to 3.0 and we're using that now. Jeff's, well, why aren't you using Drupal? But
it depends on what you want to do, right? I mean, Drupal. WordPress is good for...
Drupal's like killing a fly with a cannon.
and such. Yeah, exactly. Drupal is good if you're running a system or site that wants to do more than just one type of thing.
Well, exactly. That's a great tool. Should talk about that accessibility. I know some folks are successfully building sites with that.
Oh, it's totally, it's very, very accessible.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I'd say totally, because there certainly were a lot of fields that weren't spoken, so you had to kind of play around and, well, what does this do?
I mean, the 7 release, they've been doing a tremendous amount of work on the accessibility front. It's currently in pre-release, so, I mean, you use it as you know, with that little bit of warning there that it is pre-release, but they've done a lot of work. I know that Everett Zufeld is fairly heavily involved in that, and he's spent a lot of time working with them to make sure it is screen reader friendly, too.
Okay, we got a question going back to the ribbons. William asks if the ribbons are the same as 2007. So how do they differ?
Largely they're the same. The major differences are, of course, Outlook didn't really have them before as much as they do now. And there are a few new layouts. As far as the file menu, of course, has been modified, and some of the new features have been slipped in kind of here and there.
Sometimes it now starts out minimized instead of visible, like in a number of the apps, not Word or Excel, but in, for example, OneNote and such. And it's been integrated into SharePoint and the fact that you can customize it. So if you don't like where something is or what tab it's under, you can create your own.
If you're proficient with 2007, you won't have a terrible time with 2010.
No, it's very similar.
All right, so the folks that are they're coming in from 03 are going to have a little bit of culture shock. But again, if you remember that everything, all the commands can be learned. They all have mnemonics. So, you know, you go to your ribbon and, you know, whether it's HR or NU or whatever. So everything, though some are a little strange, there's not enough letters to go around, but certainly there's, you can learn the commands that you need to know. It wouldn't be prudent to learn every single command because you're not going to need it. But
well, and a lot more of the commands are off of the right-click menu, the application key. So a lot of the things that you might have traditionally gone up to the file menu in 2003 for, or the format or the insert type menu, you'll see in the application key.
Now, there's a lot of mention here of much better support for rich media, meaning that you don't have to use third-party apps. Do we know which things they're talking about, going beyond video or graphic or image editing or manipulation, or what are they referring to when they say rich media?
That sounded a lot like marketing fail to me.
Yeah, I hear you. Rich media. Is that a standard?
I was under the impression it was video, music, and picture editing that were the areas that they were really focusing on.
RMML, Rich Media. Yeah, okay. Well, again, if you have any questions, just press F9. We'd be glad to answer those for you, or just send a text question, and we'll answer those and kind of see what we can find out here. I'm liking it so far. It's a few things to get my head around. I jumped from 03. I played with 07 a little bit, but I really went from 03 to 2010, so just getting used to getting things in place.
The thing you should really have a look at is the categorization. If you have just jumped from 2003 to 2010, it was good in 2007 as well. But the fact that you can categorize email as it comes in, yes, you can give them little colored balloons, but also you can filter the categories you add to email as it comes in. So you can have all your email in your inbox, but let's say you just want to see the messages from your work team. Well, you could put a rule in that categorizes all the emails from this person as your work team, and give it a keyboard shortcut that in the inbox, when you want to just view that category, you hit that keystroke. So like Control-Alt-1, and bam, there's just the messages from your team.
Oh, is that the quick steps function?
No, this is just categorization.
Oh, okay. Okay.
They've just done a phenomenal job. They really improved it in 2007, and they've continued it on in 2010.
Now, what does
it sound like? Somebody was trying to ask.
Yeah,
a question.
Someone. Okay, go ahead with the question, sir.
Sir, this is Terry.
Yes, sir. This is Tate. And my question is: has anybody played with Publisher at all? And they have a web program. You can build a simple website through their program. They might actually have done anything with that.
Well, what
they
about
really
Publisher?
With it.
Oh, it's the same. It's the same bloated code that we played with 7-8 years ago.
Pretty much.
Is it accessible? I mean, could you build, if you didn't mind all that extra garbage and just wanted to get something out that would actually display, i.e. maybe if nothing else, but...
When I did something with it, the code looked real ugly. I don't know that it would even show up right.
That was my concern, man. I wrote a few pages and just looked at them and just so much code. I'm like, why do I need all this? I know I don't need all this. I can do it by hand and it renders and IE in Firefox. It just doesn't make sense. Let me do this text question and I'll acknowledge Terry in just a second. Had a weird time in Office 2007, in particular Outlook 2007 with System Access. Are there special things I should know when upgrading to Outlook 2010 to make things more accessible? Well, according to one review on California, and I guess it depends on what you're reviewing and what features and functions you're looking at, System Access actually came out with the best rating of all screen readers. This gentleman actually gave it a 96% rating, though to my knowledge, those haven't been posted online. He gave Window Eyes 82 and JAWS 25. Now, granted, it was probably without script, so maybe, and I know, you know.
Well, they'll be charging you for that, so. The scripts, so, you know.
Oh, please, don't get me started on these guys.
So, anyway, do you have any comments on that? Are you playing with System Access and just differences in the way that Office performs with System Access, either better or worse? We can take it.
Yeah, I've used it with System Access and NVDA and tried it with JAWS. And what I will say is that the one area that still needs work is the calendar. Nobody does it well in 2010. There's some spots where none of the screen readers seem to dock. It's a painful experience with NVDA. It's a tolerable experience with System Access. I could do pretty much everything I want to do in Outlook, with the exception of the calendar. If I change the calendar view to either active appointments or list, it reads better, but I'd still like to have the day view or standard calendar view access. So I didn't see anywhere where it didn't read properly or didn't read well, with one or two like little minor exceptions, and I'm sure they'll get them fixed.
Yeah, it's important to report those things.
Did Windows implement their calendar view with 2010, the insert C or whatever that command is?
I don't know, honestly.
No idea. NVDA, JAWS, System Access, didn't try Windows.
Terry, your question tonight, please. I maybe found something better to do.
Yeah. Hello?
Better than Office 2010?
Yes, sir, you are. Go ahead, sir.
Oh, okay. Okay, now you have me. Yes?
Go ahead.
Okay. I had installed Microsoft Office 2007 into my machine, and it is the student version disk. They must have installed it and gave me the disk without unwrapping it, so it must have been a separate, different copy. And so when I tried to install the unwrapped version once I opened it, I'm getting a message that's saying, it's not the official version or not a registered version or something, and I can't get into the online support.
Well, have you uninstalled it? And that's a good point, because that's one of the things you should definitely uninstall before, instead of just trying to do an override and upgrading any existing version. Would you not agree with that, Peter or Jeff?
Office 2010 should upgrade your existing installs, but sounds like what you're talking about is you got a disk from someone that was the Office 2007 Student Edition. What probably happened is, I don't know where you got it, but what probably happened is they used your key to install your copy of it, but they didn't open your disk. So,
that's right, yeah.
If you've already activated the license on a computer, Microsoft won't let you activate another one without calling and talking to them.
Yeah, so it's either an issue of, could he just remove it and then maybe get this one installed? But the question is, are they different versions? Or I found that, all those 60-day demos of the student edition or whatever that they love to just put on your box, you would uninstall it, but in typical Microsoft fashion, it truly wasn't off the system unless you ran something like PCD Crapifier to get rid of it, and then you could reinstall it.
The thing is the student editions of Office use a different licensing scheme, so once they're activated, you pretty much have to call.
Okay, so you may have to call Microsoft and kind of work on it. They will reset it on their end. It's not like Windows, where sometimes after 6 months they reset the keys for Windows, but Office doesn't work that way. No. So I think you might have to call Microsoft and speak to someone in India.
Probably
the answer to that question. You got two different versions going on.
I purchased it at the time, and I purchased the purchased it with the machine, and bought the software at that point. And they had a separate install. We are talking about two different.
Is that chat room traffic I hear in the background there?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to, I would say probably, I would agree with Peter, you're probably going to have to talk to Microsoft. It's going to have to reset the key for your original install. That would be my guess on how that's going to have to be approached.
Right.
Down to 4 minutes. See if we got any other questions from anyone else here this evening.
You're just to mention there, Michael.
Yes, sir.
If he doesn't have the key, he can always get it with something like Everest.
Yeah, there's a good program called Everest that you can run and actually get the key off. It's just a big tree view, list view, everything on your machine, and you can get all your product keys. I think there's some other tools for it, although sometimes some of these other tools, your antivirus malware detection might flag it, as something doing, something illegal or something undesirable. Nefarious tasks, exactly. So Jelly Bean doesn't do that. Jelly Bean just gets the Windows key. But yeah, Everest is a good tool. I use that just to find out what's really inside a box versus what they tell me. So.
And it gives you all the serial numbers for the software installed on that machine.
Right, you can do big printout, so that way you've got all those serial numbers right. So when you call them, you have that information in front of you to say, well, here's the serial number that I have, and get it reset for you. Yeah. Hopefully without too much grief, because a lot of those offices are one machine only. So go ahead, sir.
So should you actually, you brought a good point a while ago about installing. I have 2007 on my machine right now, running Windows 7. And should I uninstall that and to put 2010 on?
You probably don't need to. You can probably just do a straight upgrade unless you have a corrupt install. So if it doesn't work installing it, if installing it gives you some undesired results, just uninstall everything and start over. But the vast majority of cases, you should be able to do an upgrade.
Well, I believe Paul Thurrott, who's tied pretty close to Microsoft, even suggested uninstalling and installing your new copy, because 2010 is a bit different, isn't it? I mean, it has a lot of online components. You run it, and it's going out online and adding a lot of additional modules.
You know, and he's probably right that that's the safest way to go. But they've made an upgrade path, and it should work. And if it doesn't, then that's something else. But
I can say the version I'm running was upgraded from 2007 to 2010. No problem.
Speaking from the perspective of somebody that's done IT in a large organization, if I have to totally uninstall something before I do an upgrade, that company has messed something up.
Well, that's fair enough. What about folks with O3? Would you say the same thing? Or?
No. Definitely O3.
Definitely remove it. Okay, and that sounds fair. I think that's going to put the wraps on it. Any final comments from you guys?
I would just make one quick comment about the SharePoint that if there's one spot that the screen readers don't seem to work well in yet, it's pretty much in areas of SharePoint. So I did say Office 2010 is great, but do be aware that they've done a lot of ARIA markup in the interface. So for editors and changes in the web version of Word and all this stuff, it tends to be a pretty mediocre to unusable experience.
Any thoughts from you, Peter?
The web accessibility component of a lot of these Web 2.0 kind of applications just isn't quite there. And so I would say that just kind of hang on and things will hopefully improve soon.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot, guys, for your time this evening. Again, we have a different schedule during the summer. We will be back with our July edition of the Tech Chat on the 29th. And we'll be talking about the iPhone. By then, most people have it. You already have yours, Peter. So I'm curious, you've had a day to play around with it. And I was intrigued when you said that VoiceOver sounds different. I don't know if that was a good thing or a bad thing. But we'll talk about the iPhone on the 29th. Also on July 5th, before then, we will be talking about all things books, playing around with iBooks, and see if they're ready to bring Blio to the party. And just the whole EPUB format, if there really are 1 million books out there, is claimed. And kind of where that's going. And then, of course, immediately following that, we'll have coverage from the conventions and all that's new and cool in those places. And also, I just heard, I guess it's been out a week, but I'm out of the queue there because I don't do email lists, that Pro Tools has been out for a week. So now accessible. So we'll definitely investigate that as well. So
I'll be back on the 29th of next month to talk about my favorite topic, the iPhone.
Oh, loving it. I can't wait to hear. I'm contemplating. I haven't done it. I was going to, but they had the wrong shipping address, and it would have went to my ex-wife, and I just didn't want to do that.
iPhone doesn't become available.
Maybe she wouldn't have been your ex-wife anymore if you sent her a new iPhone now.
Yeah. There you go. All right, well, thanks a lot, gentlemen. Let me play my outro music here, and we will talk to you soon. Until then, let's stay connected and stay directed.
This concludes another Serotalk Tech Chat, powered by Accessible Event, a product of Serotech Corporation, giving the blind, deaf, and deafblind full access to classes, meetings, and webinars using Microsoft Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint slides, and web pages. 508 compliance is just one click away at www.accessibleevent.com. Until we meet again, stay connected and stay directed.